The American had turned from pale to red and then back to pale, but he didn't look contrite or sickened. If his expression held anything, it was elation and relief. He said, "That was the first man I've ever killed. The first." "I doubt that it'll be the last," Burton said, "unless you're killed first." Ruach, looking at the corpse, said, "A dead man looks just as dead here as on earth. I wonder where those who are killed in the afterlife go. If we live long enough, we might find out. You two women gave a very fine account of yourselves." Alice said, "I did what had to be done," and walked away. She was pale and shaking. Logu, on the other hand, seemed exhilarated. They got to the Grailstone about half hour before noon. Things had changed. Their quiet little hollow contained about 60 people, many of whom were working on pieces of chert. One man was holding a bloody eye into which a chip of stone had flown. Several more were bleeding from the face or holding smashed fingers. Burton was upset, but he could do nothing about it. The only hope for regaining the quiet retreat was that the lack of water would drive the intruders away. That hope went quickly. A woman told him that there was a small cataract about a mile and a half to the west. It fell from the top of the mountain down the tip of an arrowhead-shaped canyon and into a large hole which it had only half filled. Eventually it should spill out and take a course through the hills and spread out on the plain. Unless, of course, stone from the mountain base was brought down to make a channel for the stream. "Or we make water pipes out of the big bamboo," Frigate said. They put their grails on the rock, each carefully noting the exact location of his, and they waited. He intended to move on after the grails were filled. A location halfway between the cataract and the Grailstone would be advantageous, and they might not be so crowded. The blue flames roared out above the stone just as the sun reached its zenith. This time the grails yielded an antipasto salad, Italian black bread with melted garlic butter, spaghetti and meatballs, a cupful of dry red wine, grapes, more coffee crystals, 10 cigarettes, a marijuana stick, a cigar, more toilet paper and a cake of soap and 4 chocolate creams. Some people complained they didn't like Italian food, but no one refused to eat. The group, smoking their cigarettes, walked along the base of the mountain to the cataract. This was at the end of the triangular canyon, where a number of men and women had set up camp around the hole. The water was icy cold. After washing out their containers, drying them, and refilling the buckets, they went back in the direction of the Grailstone. After a half mile, they chose a hill covered by pines except for the apex on which a great iron tree grew. There was plenty of bamboo of all sizes growing around them. Under the direction of Kaz and of Frigate, who had spent a few years in Malaysia, they cut down bamboo and built their huts. These were round buildings with a single door and a window in the rear and a conical thatched roof. They worked swiftly and didn't try for nicety, so that by dinner time everything except the roofs was finished. Frigate and Monat were picked to stay behind as guards, while the others took the grails to the stone. Here they found about 300 people constructing lean-tos and huts. Burton had expected this. Most people wouldn't want to walk a half mile every day, 3 times a day, for their meals. They would prefer to cluster around the Grailstones. The huts here were arranged haphazardly and closer than necessary. There was still the problem of getting fresh water, which was why he was surprised that there were so many here, but he was informed by a pretty Slovene that a source of water had been found close by only this afternoon. A spring ran from a cave almost in a straight line up from the rock. Burton investigated. Water had broken out from a cave and was trickling down the face of the cliff into a basin about 50 feet wide and 8 deep. He wondered if this was an afterthought on the part of whoever had created this place. He returned, just as the blue flames thundered. Kaz suddenly stopped to relieve himself. He didn't bother to turn away. Logu giggled. Tanya turned red. The Italian women were used to seeing men leaning against buildings wherever the fancy took them. Wilfrida was used to anything. Alice surprisingly ignored him as if he were a dog, and that might explain her attitude. To her, Kaz was not human and so couldn't be expected to act as humans were expected to act. There was no reason to reprimand Kaz for this just now, especially when Kaz didn't understand his language. but he would have to use sign language the next time Kaz proceeded to relieve himself while they were sitting around and eating. Everybody had to learn certain limits, and anything that upset others while they were eating should be forbidden. And that, he thought, included quarreling during mealtimes. To be fair, he would have to admit that he had participated in more than his share of dinner disputes in his lifetime.